Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back to the Gear Garage Live Show. Today, we have a great show plan, a few questions to answer. I first want to start by talking about public lands because it came up in a few episodes ago and I've been thinking about this a lot and just want to share some thoughts. And this has been a hot topic lately, the idea of selling out public lands, because it came up in the reconciliation bill. And looking back at that, the stuff that Senator Mike Lee, Utah Senator, put in there was making us sell off public lands. It was saying we need to sell off, I think it was like 0.5% to 0.75%, which is a lot of public lands. And so it was definitely being opposed, and it should be opposed. We shouldn't be forced to sell off hundreds of thousands of acres of public lands. That's what was going to happen. And I think his idea, at least what he said his idea was to create more land for affordable housing. I think if people interpret it as not working that well for that, I don't know for sure, but I just want to make the point that like, this is a complicated, so it's hard. I'm trying to put this into words correctly because I feel like people ain't mad at me. We should have opposed that because we don't want to have to be forced. We don't want the government to be forced to sell public lands because they'll just sell stuff off if they have to, but they should be allowed to. And I know that there's this whole like protect public lands thing that's popped up from that, but I think it's more complicated than we should sell out public lands for sure. Or we should never sell public lands, because all like a lot of lands that the government holds, and this is just land that people didn't want, a lot of it, like a lot of BLM land is just the land that wasn't homesteaded. It was just leftover land that nobody ever wanted. And the government started managing it, which cost our taxpayer dollars to manage that land, right? So the government's managing it on our behalf. Some of it could be sold. I just want to like share my opinion. I feel like it was good this wasn't in the bill that we had to sell off lands, but I don't want everybody to be like protect public lands at all costs, because there are some public lands out there that it would make sense to sell off. Now, some of it would, we don't need to sell it off to like benefit billionaires, which I guess is what they were saying. Maybe they could sell a public lands to, I don't know, fund a position in the BLM or buy some other land. Like our agencies buy lands to protect them as well. So there's in holdings within national forests, within wilderness, they also get bought. So I don't know what they do with the money. Like I'm not going to get involved with that, but there's a lot of lands that the government holds that aren't benefiting the public, that we're not like going hiking out, we're not horseback riding on. It's a lot of it's just like pretty barren, useless land that in some cases could be sold for the greater good. Like maybe somebody could build a factory there, or somebody could build who knows what, something that benefits society. And so I just want to make the point that it was good we defeated that, and we needed to protect the forced sell-off of public lands. But I hope everybody doesn't leave this debate thinking protect public lands at all costs, because there's public lands that we care about, like the upper section of the Rogue, like where I go mountain biking almost every day, where you go hiking, where people go dirt biking and ATVing and fishing and hunting and all the things. There's public lands that are important paths for wildlife. The wildlife, if they become public lands, they get fenced off and the wildlife can't migrate. But there's some public lands that we could sell off. And so there's being wholeheartedly opposed to selling public lands 100%, I think is too strong of a reaction to this. Just saying, hey, let's not agree with a forced sell-off of public lands, but if it does happen in the future, let it happen. Cool. I just want to share my thoughts on that, because I feel like it's been come up a lot in conversation. And I've had a lot of time to reflect and think about it, and just felt like it was important to say what I think about that. Okay, so we talked about that. Let's answer questions. I'm going to finish up just talking about a couple of courses we're offering in Ecuador next winter, if anybody's interested in hearing about those. Okay, so the first question about boat spacing, my favorite topic. I feel like this isn't covered enough, and it's such a crucial part of safety. is proper boat spacing. I feel like rescue courses should cover boat spacing, and most of them don't. But it's when we rescue people, we do it from other boats. And if your boat spacing is correct, you can rescue people. If your boat spacing is poor, you can't rescue people. So boat spacing to me is a key part of safety and rescue. So what is considered good boat spacing in low water runs when giving space for crux moves? Is it the same in high water crux moves? It's not. It's not at all. But I'm going to tell you my principle, and then it applies to both. You want to be as close as you can so that you probably don't hit each other, but not so far away that you can't rescue swimmers. So I just want to break that down. You want to be so close that you probably don't hit each other. You might hit each other. That's a possibility, right? It's frustrating. It's annoying. It can cause problems, right? And so you want to be really close so that you probably don't hit each other, but except that 3% of the time, whatever, you might hit each other. That's just the reality. But not so far away that you can't do rescues. And when I watch other groups boat, mainly private boaters, commercial companies are good at this, but private boaters mainly, the spacing is just way too far out. Like you can't rescue each other. So at low water, you know, if it's low water middle fork is the classic example. If a boat gets stuck, like if it's a crux move, a boat is probably going to get stuck in there or likely get stuck in there. You don't want the second boat right on their heels because they're just going to run into it and make the problem worse. And that's just going to keep happening. If everybody's super close, that's going to get boat stuck. But so when the first, you want your best boater though, ideally in the front, ideally your most likely boater to make it through and your best self-rescuer. So when that first boat goes through that crux move, you want to think to yourself, if that person swims, who's going to rescue them? Well, if they get stuck and they swim, nobody's going to rescue them. So they better be good at self-rescuing. They better be athletic, good swimmers, heads up. They're also taking risk. But they also, boat two, you want to kind of be on their tail. If they do get stuck and swim, then maybe you can assist, right? You are the rescue. If you're sitting back like way up in a pool up high while one boat goes through solo, and if they swim, you know, you're 5 minutes from leaving or whatever, 2 minutes from leaving, that's not good. So you definitely want boat one to have some sort of rescue. And that could also just be people on shore with throw bags. That could be somebody at the bottom of the river, the rapid of the throw bag. I don't know what it is, but that first boat needs some sort of safety. And that could be a tight second boat. Once the first boat makes it through, they can play downstream safety. Then I would send boats through one at a time. Right, one boat goes through and take your time. Once they get through the crux, the next boat comes through because you don't want the pileup that's inevitable. At high water, you're not playing that game. At high water and crux moves, you want to be tight because if somebody flips or swims at high water, you want to be close to them to get them quickly. So you don't play that game. You're just like on each other's tails back to back to back. And you're not worried so much about the first boat, a boat getting stuck and pinned and somebody running into them. So good spacing at low. So the answer is it depends. Like every situation is different. I'm thinking in my mind, the low water move. In my brain, I'm thinking the chute's on the middle fork at low water. Like somebody's probably definitely going to get stuck. So boat one is going down there. They're on a mission. They don't have downstream safety potentially. Hopefully they make it through. Boat two is sitting at the top of the rapid. As soon as they get unstuck in that crux move, they're going down. Or if boat two has a serious swim, they can go down and try to help. Right. And high water, I'm just picturing, this is just me, like Ram's head on the Tuolumne high water. Like you go through there and a boat flips, you want the other three boats, five boats, however many there are, to quickly pull swimmers in, get the boat flipped over before the next rapid. So you're entering that rapid pretty close, three boat lengths, maybe, I don't know, pretty tight. So tight, you probably won't hit each other. Right. But not so much distance where if boat one flips or even if boat three flips, everybody's so far away, they can't help. So just again, to reiterate the principle, it's you want to be close enough so that you probably don't hit each other, but not so far away that you can't help rescue swimmers. And it just, every situation is different. High water, low water, sometimes it's rapid dependent. Sometimes it's other things. It's who the boats are. Is it a kayak? Is it a raft? Kayaks move faster than rafts. So if I'm the second boat in a kayak, I'm going to start with more space because I'm going to probably go faster. So there's just a lot going on there. So hopefully that helps. All right. September Middle Fork. Hey, Zach, big fan of the channel. Cool. Thank you. I love hearing that. My friend has a permit for the Middle Fork of the Salmon on September 3rd. And I'm wondering, what do you think the river will be like around then? Love to hear your thoughts. It'll be awesome. It's September's a great time to go. The weather's a little cooler. There's generally fewer people out there because of the low water. I love the trips. I'm doing a trip August 28th, so I'll be there the week before. Looking forward to it just because it's just a nice, mellow vibe out there. And the weather's cooler. It might rain a little bit. Yeah. The one thing you're probably asking about, wondering about, is the levels. And yeah, it's going to be low. It's going to be like 1.6, 1.7, which just means the top 25 is just slow and shallow. And then once you get past Pistol Creek Rapid, it's still slow and shallow, but Pistol Creek comes in, creeks start coming in, and below Indian is just great. And so, you know, when we do trips that late in the season, we the guides bring the boats down. It just takes a full day. We bump and grind and drag them down to Indian, fly our guests into Indian, and then from Indian down, it's just a wonderful trip. So yeah, should be great. Just lower water, but still a great trip. So that's it. The last thing I did want to talk about, unless anybody else has questions, if you have questions, throw them in the comments. Otherwise, we're almost done. Are these courses we're doing in Ecuador this September? And so I have a great partner down there, Santi, and he owns Nico Lodge. And he had, and if you want to just go down on your own without us, like, you should call Santi, and it's Kayak Ecuador, and book his Eco Lodge, stay for a week and just paddle a bunch of rivers. He'll provide a guide to show you around, drivers. The food is awesome. Really great, great group. So feel free, just, you know, if you want to go down to Ecuador, go down to Kayak Ecuador, call Santi. He has rafts, he has kayaks. Great dude to go with. Last year we did our first class 3+ rowing school, and it was awesome. We had a great time. Six students. We went and just saw a bunch of different rivers, got to practice a lot. It's the rivers we do are, you know, the thing we're trying to do, half of it is educational and getting better at rowing. Half thing is just having fun, going boating with some new people, some cultural stuff. So it's half education, half fun, kind of like our other class three schools. And it's meant for people to have some class three abilities. I've done like a class three school, the other stuff. They just want to go rowing in Ecuador. It's just a great day, way to row in Ecuador. It's a 7-day trip. Two of those days are travel to and from where we're based. And then we do 4 days of boating the remaining 5 days. And yeah, it's a great course. We have two of them. We have four spots open up in the second course. But we also, when I was down there, you know, we were limited to the rivers we could do because we were rowing. Like some of the, I saw some really cool, narrow, just fun rivers that I think were going to be tough to row. So we couldn't do them. I thought, man, it would be so fun to R2 these rivers. And so we created an R2 school that we haven't, nobody signed up for yet, but we thought, you know what, this just would be awesome. So we created an R2 school. If we have people to sign up, we'll do it. If we don't, we won't do it. But same thing, staying at Santi's Lodge, 4 days of boating, R2ing every day. All the prices include, like, we provide the boats for everything. You can bring your own boat if you want, but we have boats. But just want to share it out there. Again, nobody signed up for it. If nobody is interested in this R2 school, sweet, we won't run it. That's fine. But we're definitely committed to these class 3+ rowing schools in Ecuador. One of them sold out. One of them has four spots left. And would love to just fill that second one, just to have two full courses. And yeah, that's it there. So pretty much done. Way out west, thanks for the nice comment. Glad you appreciate the comment. And with that, we're done for this week. I'm going to go on the river here for a bit. So we probably won't do a show for a couple weeks. And in general, content's going to be kind of slow the next couple weeks. But when I get back, I'll try to get a bunch of low water Middle Fork footage, get some video of the new rapids, post that when I can. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching. See you in a couple weeks.